Okay, welcome everybody to training day 3 on the Media Encoder Premium workflow. Today we're going to be discussing scripting in the blueprint and different types of scripts that can be run. We're going to have an overview of the Azure Media Services Explorer and how that all operates and the feedback that you get from it on job completion and errors. And then we're going to finish up with going through the restrictions or limitations when using the workflow premium encoder in the current process of version. And we'll also finish up with some final Q&A and anything else that you wish to talk about. Okay, so we're going to start off with Peter to go through some of the scripting, and he's got some blueprint samples. So I'll be going to pass the sharing over to Peter so he can go through them with you now.
So the script component is essentially a fully-fledged Xenium component. If we look at the help documentation for it, oh boy, that's small. You're about to be fired up on your own system that there's a note there for additional documentation is with the scripted component sample. So the component runs within the blueprint. If I select it and just bring up its properties, we'll see that it has several script entries. We have a command script, which is called when data arrives on a command pin. Now, by default, the scripted component has one standard input pin and one standard output pin. So they are data pins, not command pins. Command is a specific connectivity within a Xenium graph, which can be used from some source components. I haven't really touched on using it at all in a script. I don't think it's something I need to do at the moment. I'll investigate that at some point, but I don't think it's it's something that we're going to need to look at within the context of the Azure MP anyway. So the scripted component has a data input pin and a data output pin. And if data arrives on one of those two pins, then the process input script is called for that data. And the default one here, we can see that the script engine name is going to be Groovy. Fundamentally, it's Java, JavaScript, and a superset called Groovy. And you'll see in there that there's a print line call, which prints the contents of the data container that's on the input pin. It then increments the reference count on that data container, and then it returns it, which means it will be passed out of the output pin. So it is possible to write scripts for a scripted component, which would process video and audio data. But that, again, is not something that I think is likely to be needed within the context of general day-to-day workflows. So there's another script, there's another two scripts. We have a realize script, which is called within the life cycle of the blueprint. And the life cycle of the blueprint goes through multiple stages. It goes from its initial stopped state. It goes to a state called initial. It then goes to a realize state, after which there's two pre-processed steps before all of the sources are actually started and the data starts to flow. So the realize script allows us to set up parameters within the scripted component. And I've used this in some scripts to initialize a variable, effectively a property on the component, which is then used to track lifecycle. The lifecycle script is then called at not just the realize phase, but at all of the different stages. So it's called at initial, it's called at realize, pre-process one and two, sources start, sources stop. And then there's a finalize, there's a finish stage. Again, I've used finish in some scripts because it's a guarantee that all output files that have been created have now been closed within the blueprint. So that if we need to manipulate some of the output files that were generated, we can do it in the finished stage. One thing to note here, the print line call here is not very useful. I'm not quite sure why they've used that in the initial example, because that print line data won't go anywhere unless you've got a Java debug console running. Instead, there is a command called log, which is specific to the component, it's specific to a node within the blueprint. The Xenium blueprint has each component is viewed as a node in the graph, each input and output pin also. So we can use the node log facility to actually dump data out. So let's just go over to the TOC graph that we have here, and we'll have a look at the set clip list component and also the cleanup files component. So in the context of this, this is a multiple bit rate output scenario where we're generating between either 4 or 7 MP4 files and generating an appropriate manifest for dynamic packaging on Azure. Now, because, and Scott will cover some of the limitations of the Azure MP later, currently we can only upload one single file containing asset for a source file and one blueprint file for a Xenium media processor job. What this means is that we can't upload a clip list alongside the source media file, which might have information like trim in, trim out, and possibly some extra metadata properties. So in order to get around this initially just to set trimming, I've created a script in a scripted component. You'll see that there's no input or output pin connected. It just runs at the realize phase of the graph. So if we step back and think about what's happening on the MP itself, when we upload our blueprint and our source file and we submit the job, the media source file is transferred to a local temporary directory of the virtual machine hosting the MP. And the first step that the processor does is sets a source clip list with a path which points to that new temporary file. So if we were to upload a blueprint that had trimming information added to the clip list XML, that would actually be wiped out and replaced by default single media file clip list with no trimming. Now, that happens at the initial phase. So when the graph is then realized, we can read that XML in the script and modify it. So that's what we're doing here. Now, if we just expand this out. First line of the script, we're grabbing clip list XML. So we're using the get property function of the node. And we're looking double dot, so one directory layer, you could view it as one path level up, clip list XML. And because the scripted component is at the root level of the graph, that means we're looking up a layer and we're looking to the property clip list XML to actually grab that XML. We're then using node log to dump out that clip list XML. So if you're running it locally, you'll see a full path name. You'll see the whole clip list XML, which will contain the path names for your local file. It checks to see if it has a trim element already. This is purely debug. If you run this blueprint multiple times without this check, it'll add multiple trim entries to the clip list. So we're reading in the clip list XML. We're replacing the video source and audio source elements with a new video source and audio source element, which adds a trim element as well. So this means that before you submit this blueprint to the MP, you could modify these two time codes and change them to whatever you require for the actual job that's going to be run. So you can set the trimming appropriately. Now, I know Kevin's on the call. Kevin had a question yesterday about he just wanted to trim the first 20 seconds off of the file but run the rest of it. You can omit either the endpoint or the outpoint. If you omit the endpoint, it will start at 0. If you omit the outpoint, it will run on to the end of the file.
So I could just leave out the outpoint text.
Yes, yeah. So
Okay.
you could just remove that. The resulting generated click list will just have an inpoint value trim, and the transcode should then run on to the end of the source file.
All right, copy that.
Again, for debug purposes, we then log to the node, and then we set the click list back to the root property on the blueprint. So that's during the realize phase, so that when we get to sources start, we have our valid trim click list available. Now, a couple of things there. If we look at the blueprint root, we can see I've chosen a local source file, and that has resulted in it generating me a basic single clip XML. So this is what happens on the MP as well. We get this kind of thing generated. If I quickly run and stop the blueprint, that clip list XML data will update. Quickly is a relative term when we're dealing with 7 layers of ABC. Okay, so now if we look at our clip list, we'll see that we've got the trim in and trim out values have been added. And if we look at the system tag, we can see a log entry. If we edit that log entry, we can see all of the logs. So we can see the different states that the graph has been through. At the blueprint level. If you now select the set clip list component and say system again, and we go to view the logs, we'll see that it actually dumped out the original clip list for debug purposes and then the modified one. So node log is very useful when you're running in the designer. The next scripted component in here, in this blueprint, we're actually doing some logic. We're analyzing to see whether the source clip is an HD file or an SD file. And in this case, it's SD. But what we're doing is we're not feeding, we're blocking the flow of video data to the last three ABC codecs, which are for HD sources only. So 960 by 540 and a couple of 1280 by 720. This means that their corresponding multiplexers and then the corresponding file outputs don't receive any data. But because of the way the file output component works, we still have a 0 kilobyte MP4 file generated on disk. So for the sake of completeness, I tidy up those files afterwards. So if we look in the remove empty file script, you'll see this time I'm using the lifecycle script. There are some imports where I'm importing Java libraries, so standard Java lang string and Java Apache Commons FileNameUtils and FileUtils, and also some Kayak entries as well. The original name of Xenium, obviously. Again, we're using node log to log out the graph state. So this component, if we look back at system for a moment, you'll see that we actually log the graph states as it steps through. And what the script does is it looks at the graph state value each time, and if it equals finish, then we know that everything is finished and closed. It then looks for the parent node of this Kayak component, which is actually going to be the root blueprint itself. Pauses for 2 seconds. It doesn't really need to do that now that I have it running at the finish stage, but I left it in for completeness. It then walks the graph. So if you imagine all of the components and all of the input and output pins appear in a traversable graph, what this does is we walk the graph from the root node looking for, first of all, matching against is what we've got a Kayak component node rather than an input or output pin. If it is, we then get the node name and we check to see whether it's file output 5, 6 or 7. These are the three that would generate a zero length file if we were only using an SD source file. If when we create a file object from that path, we're looking at the file name on the node, we're creating a file object from the path, we're then checking to see if the length is zero, and if it is, we're using the Apache file utils to delete that file. So we're doing a clear up at the end, and we're also handling any exceptions that might result from, say, we're on a file system that doesn't allow that force delete to work. Now, I can actually just comment the node log for each of the nodes in the graph, and you'll see how it walks the graph.
Quickly being relative again.
True. So you'll see that there's no data flowing through 5, 6, and 7 multiplexers. And now if we look at 2 seconds after the graph finishes, the log is limited, so we're only going to see the last segment of this log now. That's why I turned it off for, you know, once I debugged it correctly. So you can see it walking the various child nodes, so the ABC encoder, the ABC controller, and also pins like harness out. That's internal to an advanced ABC encoder. Eventually it finds file output 5, matches against it, figures out that the output file is zero length, and then logs that it removes it. So with this we can actually walk the blueprint and look at properties and potentially change properties as well. I did the other day, this was, I don't know why I didn't realize we had this already, but the other day I discovered we have a component called file delete. And so in fact this functionality could be built by using the file delete component and a little bit of logic.
Yeah.
So there are often ways of doing even a complex task that looks like it'll need a scripted component. The fact is it may be possible to do just using standard components. I guess one other thing here is that scripts don't just apply to scripted components. If I just take a look at a large blueprint that I did, here we go. We had another client requirement where they want to generate multi-bit rate standard definition. And depending on whether the source file is HD, SD 16x9, or SD 4x3, they wanted to adjust the resolution of the encodes. That's not actually the application that we use the script for. The scripting component, rather, was used in this case to set those values. Now, where we have used scripts elsewhere other than scripted components is in this language extraction. So if you look at the top right-hand side of this blueprint, you'll see some extra properties, primary language, secondary language. These are extracted from a particular source file name convention, where the input source file name contains, in this case, if we look at our primary source file value, we can see that it has an extra dot separator with 2OGER, GER, 2OENG. It's basically primary language stereo German, secondary language stereo English. And these parameters are being generated by a script. So if you look on when you can edit a standard string, you can also use expression, which obviously you'll have come across in the output file naming, but we can also use a script here. And the script evaluation for properties can use a property path drawn from the root blueprint as a variable, And then in my script, I'm actually just doing some simple string processing to extract the appropriate piece from the source file name. So this is the other place that scripts can be used, is we can use a script to set a property. Again, they can be simple, they can be complex. It really does come down to if a customer has a specific requirement that it looks as though it can't be covered by a ordinary blueprint processing, then we can always take a quick look and see whether it's something that a script would be appropriate for.
Question, Peter.
Yep, sure.
Is it possible to read metadata of the incoming movie file into a script?
It all depends on what that source file contains or what it is.
For example, we had a requirement from a customer that says, I want to have a JSON file written next to the output media that describes how long my incoming file was, what bitrate it was, like whatever you know about the incoming media. So I assume with a template component and some scripting that should be possible, but not quite sure how to get to the data.
Well, that specific one, so where you're looking at extracting source properties. So let's say we wanted the compressed video rate of this particular source file. You can see at the top, we have a path, / media file input, / compressed video.
Yep.
And that's the path to this pin. The pin then has properties, one of which would be bitrate.
Aha.
And that property can be accessed from a script. It is specific in this case, it's an MPEG-2 stream, so the average bitrate, constant bitrate fields don't get filled in. But what does get filled in is max bitrate, and I think there's probably an average bitrate value as well somewhere. No, so the only one that gets filled in here is the MPEG-2 in the maximum bitrate field. This property is accessible using / media file input, / compressed video, / maximum underscore bitrate. Maximum underscore bit underscore rate. So I can probably access that.
So you would do a get node or something?
So if I go back to the root blueprint, if I click on the background and I right click, and I say add property, and that property is max input bitrate. Excuse the weird display here. Unfortunately, the designer is not high bitrate, high DPI aware, so on my surface it starts looking a little odd. But if I just add that property, we'll see the property come up here. Let me just make sure I set it to, yeah, there we go. Now I could use script here, and I could say max bitrate equals node, get property, and we will go double dot, media file input, oops. Returning a number, but the property is edit definition. Okay, so we want an integer here, not a string. And no, it doesn't look as I've got the right syntax. That is essentially how we would do it. I need to have a bit of a dig and find out what's going wrong in my script. So straight away now here I've got an error message. It doesn't like the separator, of course.
At what point in time is this typically evaluated?
Yeah, that's a very good question. I have asked our developers when I was working on one particular thing, and I didn't really get a very coherent answer. The evaluation of a fixed script on a property is, I believe, as soon as you enter that value, it's evaluated. Any changes to the value will also propagate and change the evaluation, get the script to reevaluate.
Okay.
And it's still compiling. Okay, this time it's probably not the right path. Hold on. Yeah, I'm still not getting what I'm expecting, so I need to look into that. This is the issue, is that a certain amount of my scripting has been trial and error to begin with, identifying the correct path, etc., to use, because of the sparseness of the documentation. But as I say, that's a perfect example. If somebody's saying they want to access source media parameters and put it out to a templated JSON file, yes, we could certainly look into it and get something working pretty quickly.
Okay.
So, a bit of a whistle-stop to or through scripting, but as I say, having a base knowledge of that things work and that we can provide some templates, and that certainly we're able to look a bit deeper, that's the key thing to be aware of.
Okay, so now we're going to go over the Azure Media Services Explorer. Just quickly, I'm going to upload some assets and start to run some jobs. And we'll see what sort of progress they make and go through the troubleshooting process if we need to. And then we'll finish up with going through the limitations of the processor. Okay, so the assets I'll be uploading, some varying source files. I haven't tested them yet, so I hope that we will have some errors returned to us so we can troubleshoot locally and investigate the cause of the issues. And the workflow that we will be running the jobs with is just a three-layer SDMP4 workflow with AAC Dolby Stereo, and it's going to also produce an ISM manifest file output, and there isn't any logic to it either. So I'm just going to open my designer. So this is the blueprint that I made earlier. I just edited the one that we made earlier on in the training. As you can see, there's no real logic in there, but it should be a pretty stable blueprint to run. So I'm just going to open up my Explorer. Okay, so I've opened up the Explorer, and now I'm just going to upload some of those assets. And just in case any of you haven't used the Explorer before, I'm just going to talk through as I go. So on the Assets tab, I'm just going to click on the asset on the menu toolbar, then Upload, and then from Local Files, Single File Assets, and I'll find my workflow. And upload the workflow asset. Okay, so my workflow is up. You can see if I go back to the Assets tab, it's now showing as available. So I'm going to attempt to upload a small asset, a media file, and we're just going to see how successful that is. And there we go. And so when you're uploading the assets, tab, and you can track them. go back to assets, my two new assets will appear at the top as available. So to submit the asset for transcode, again, on the assets tab, there are two ways to submit the asset. One is to click on the to highlight the asset you want to transcode, click on process on the menu toolbar, and then select encode asset with media encoder premium workflow. Now the other way is you could actually right click on the asset, then select encode, and then encode asset with media encoder premium workflow. And this will open a new window. So in this window, you can select the processor version, which has been selected for us, and this is the new Xenium processor. And then you can define some other things, like the name you want to give the job when you see it running in the Jobs tab. You can define the output asset name, which by default will be input asset name with premium encoded with, and then the workflow name appended to the output, to the end of the file name. You can give the job a priority as well, and then you can select the storage output. In the workflow file name panel, we can select one of the workflows that are automatically populated in this window. So I'm just going to choose EMEA training.workflow, which I've just uploaded, and then hit launch encoding. As soon as I execute that launch encoding, will then automatically go to the Jobs tab and appear at the top of the list with the name I've given the job. Now, it may take a while for it to get from processing to any new feedback. So Xavier, this is the first time I've actually used this. How am I doing so far?
Very good.
It's
I'm pleased
good
to see this demo.
Yeah.
Typically, also, I show that in the processors tab, you can set the size of the hardware. So, for example, here you are running on the basic unit because you use the share pool. So, if you want to increase the performance, you could switch to one unit and select standard or premium, and it will run very faster for premium.
Okay, yeah, thank you. Yeah, so that allows you to choose a. So it's essentially the same as reserved unit on streaming, isn't it? So you're.
It's for encoding.
Yes, yeah, but it's the same concept as the reserved unit for streaming, where you're allocating a resource for your use.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, except that here you reserve units for streaming. Yeah, you can switch from share pool to dedicated mode.
Yeah.
And here you can also select the hardware, so it's a little more advanced.
Yeah, the scaling of it, of course, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, thanks for that, Xavier.
No problem.
So if I go back to the Jobs tab, I can see that the state that it's returned is error. And we get other things, other information and feedback, like the start time, finish time, and the duration of the file. So to get some information on the feedback, I can right-click on the asset and hit Display Error. And so there it's returned to me there saying that it's a missing component, and what that instantly points out to me is that the version of the processor that's running does not have this AMS manifest file writer available. So if I delete this and then resave, and then I will upload the new workflow and we'll try again with the same asset. So again, assets tab, and I'll do the same thing, upload from a local file. And now that's uploaded. So I just want to go back to this error. So an error 1000 does mean that the component is available in the repository. So that's something to note. And when I run a new job, we'll see if we get another error. But you can also, rather than opening to just display the error, you can right-click and hit Display Information, and a new window will pop up. And then you'll also get the error detail at the bottom of this first window. So I'm just going to close that, and I'm going to start a new transcode job. I'm going to right-click on my asset again and hit Encode with Media Encoder Premium Workflow. I'm going to do exactly the same as last time, except choose the newer workflow without the AMS Manifest File Writer. Okay, the transcode job now is in progress. Okay, now that's also returned us with an error. And again, I'm just going to right-click and see if I can get some feedback on what the error is that we received. So color space is not fully defined. You've seen that error in the first couple of days of training that we did. So I'm just going to open those assets locally and see if we can troubleshoot the issue locally as well. So I've already got the EMEA Training version 1.1 workflow open. I'm just going to open up that asset. Okay, so it seems like there are multiple issues with this one. See, it's a video-only source file. So, although that the error return was the color space is not fully defined, I would also expect that if we fix that issue, that we're then going to receive another issue from the AAC encoder component. So, we'll first of all troubleshoot the color space issue. So, as you can see, the color space standard is not there. So we'll go to our video data type up data, and we'll need to set one here to populate that field if it's missing, in which case, in this case specifically, it is. And it's a HD source file, so we'll change the color space to 709. I believe the video format converter. Now I'm just going to check the feedback that we got here just to see if it indicates which component threw the error. Okay, so here we just have the error detail and it doesn't tell us which of the components is causing the issue, so that will take some troubleshooting initially for you to understand and know which components require certain metadata in the source file properties. So, in fact, before I change this, I'm just going to run the graph here as we run it in the cloud. And then you can see the error received there is exactly the same. So we get exactly the same feedback. So now if I change back to populating that missing data, and then hitting the start button. There's no issue with the color space. But for some reason, it's not thrown an error with the no audio, which I do not expect to see, actually. Okay, that's pretty strange behavior. I'll just load another source file up. So I'll get the...
You mean you should have an error because there is no audio coming?
Yes, that's what I expect to see. I'll need to troubleshoot offline why we're not receiving that. Mm. So I delete the interleaver.
Yeah.
And then hit start.
You can see straight away. I think the interleaver is putting something out.
It's probably because the source file I'm using is only a second long. Maybe the duration has...
No, that won't try an error anyway, because it will just create a zero length file. That's fine.
Okay, I'm going to rebuild the blueprint to the state it was before, and we'll continue uploading the assets and seeing the feedback that we get. I'm just going to save that. So I need to now I've changed the color space standard in the video data type up data, I'm going to save this and upload it. I'm just going to call it V1.2 now.
Now you can also do drag and drop to Explorer.
You can drag and drop instead of going drop.
Yeah, mode. It's supported since the last... version.
Oh, okay, thank you.
For a single file.
Okay, I'm just going to submit that job again, and then I'll upload one more asset, and then we'll test that, and then we'll see what feedback we get from that as well. While that job's running, I'm just going to try and upload it another asset. I'm also going to encode this file as well with the same workflow. Okay, so the last asset that we submitted with the 1.2 workflow has processed fine, so we can open up job information on that to have a look. You see there are no errors received from that. I'm we get some information on the workflow used to create the asset and the output asset name as well. So I'll just see what the new asset comes back with the same workflow. Okay, so that new asset's returned with another error, so can display information or display error. I'll just choose that this time. And it says input file is not supported. So this now kind of leads on to the discussion that we're going to have on the current restrictions or limitations of the processor. Yes, so the assets that I had uploaded, asset number 6 is none here, but the asset number 4 that we used is a QuickTime.mov file with DVC Pro video and PCM audio inside. And one of the current restrictions or limitations of the processor is that there is no support currently for .mov source, because the media file input component relies on QuickTime being installed on the host doing the transcode, which currently is, as I say, is not supported on Windows VMs. Sticking with the media file input, you are also unable to use enable direct show filters, which will tell the component to look on the system for third-party filters to help decode a source file that it's unable to natively decode. So unless files can be natively decoded with the component, they're not able to be used. Now, it's quite important to note that if you click on the media file input component, locally you can select direct show enabled here on the right. So when you're testing on premises, you can have that functionality, but as soon as you upload the workflow as an asset to run jobs with the Media Encoder Premium processor, that won't have that functionality. So something to bear in mind if you open a workflow locally and you see that that's enabled, because by default it's actually not, then that's one way to help you troubleshoot issues where it seems to be decoding problems of the source files. One of the biggest limitations that we've seen at the moment, only one input asset per transcode task or job is supported. So there's no support for multiple files just yet. That means no external subtitle files, no graphic overlays, or any additional elementary stream files. As I understand it, to get this functionality is one of the highest priorities that we have. And the other highest priority, or one of the highest, is the support for ClipList XML submissions, which also takes advantage of multiple source file submissions. But unfortunately, it's not supported at the moment, so you also can't take advantage of using runtime properties or file trimming unless using a scripted component, which Peter showed us earlier. That's why there is an asterisk on that one, because it is possible using that scripted component workaround.
So there is some confusion here sometimes. We can use the ClipList XML component, right? But we cannot...
We can do that with a script component by modifying it at the realize phase, yes.
So we've gone through no ClipList support. There's also no MPEG TS multiplexing. So that is single program transport stream files, and therefore there's also no HTTP live streaming HLS output, because we also use in our Selenium Flex file solution, we use MPEG transport stream using the Manzanita MPEG TS multiplexer, which I don't think you have a license for, and therefore that's why that's not supported.
Mm-hmm.
But they are not the they are the main limitations of the processor currently. But I hope you all enjoyed the training. I hope it was very beneficial to you. And I thank you all for your time.